Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Hey, Bobby, why do you like soul food?
Because it makes me happy.
Pass the peas like you used to say. 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 Pass the
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. We got a holiday here today. And yesterday we had a de facto holiday, well, at least where I'm at in Florida, due to the tropical storm that passed through. Today's podcast, we had an exciting one yesterday. It's sort of a debrief from yesterday and anything else that you guys want to bring up. But today's podcast is titled Settlement Distinctions, Freedom Georgia Strategy. Now, let me give it a definition of a settlement. All right, and this might be a real estate lesson to many people that are listening. A settlement can be a town, city, and there are different types of distinctions of cities, class one, class B, first class city, second class city, third class city, fourth class city. We'll get in that a little bit later, but a settlement can be a town, city, village, outpost, or metropolis. All right. Once again, a settlement. Oh, excuse me. Let me read the whole thing. A settlement can be a town, city, village, outpost, or metropolis. These settlements are usually located near natural resources or close together for security. All right. They have some very large settlements, like New York City is a settlement. And it's a municipal settlement as well, which means the city has a municipal charter. But then there are other settlements like Blackjack, Oklahoma, which does not have a corporate charter. It's not, you know, but it is a settlement, and it's probably over 100 years old. And there are a lot of Blackjack, Oklahoma's all around the United States and everything in between. So we're going to get into that because essentially anybody within the sound of my voice, you can start and own your own town. The very first step is to establish a settlement. You can do it by either buying a pre-existing settlement, better known as a town or village or anything like that, or just buy some raw land with a few acres on it. You don't have to have a whole lot, and you start there. We'll go more into detail. Wait a minute. I got to find something for you guys to play. But we're going to do a debrief of yesterday when we come back.
Hi, I'm Stephen Shives, and people often ask me about how Runaway Campers got started as a business, and so many times I tell the story, and maybe I oversimplify it at times, because it honestly has been a lot of work for the past almost 5 years now, and so, you know, when we got started, I'm actually standing here next to the very first runaway camper prototype, as I called it back then. I never honestly intended to build another one. You know, it was just kind of built out of necessity, and so I've been fortunate enough to be able to buy this back from the second owner this past year, and be able to have this as kind of a memory maker. But you know, when I first built it, I wasn't even thinking about starting a business. I was just doing what I needed to do to support my family. And I was rebuilding a transit bus at the time, and I needed a transmission for one. And I actually found another identical transit bus that the body was just all shot, but it had a good motor and transmission. So I bought it, and I took it back, and I took the motor transmission out of it, and then I went to the scrapyard to get rid of what was left, and the scrapyard refused it. He said, "I can't take that. There's more fiberglass on that thing than there is metal." So I took it back home, and my wife was like, "What are you doing? Where's that? I thought you were taking it away." And I said, "No, they wouldn't take it." So the best I could figure to do is I'm going to take a saw and chop it up into small enough pieces that I can take it off to the dump. And while I was doing that, I started doing some measurements, and I realized I had a wall section there with three windows that was just slightly over 8 feet long. And I thought, what can I build out of that section of windows? I mean, they're nice, solid RV windows, a good solid wall section, and it's an even 8 feet. I can make something out of that standard measurement. And so that's where this was birthed out of. I mean, it was just, that's where the three windows are, and that's actually the side walls of that bus. It was the first and only unit that we ever built with three windows on each side. And some people ask us, well, will you build another, or, you know, why don't you do that anymore? It was just something that was done out of necessity. And out of that was a business that was birthed that a lot of people, you know, refer to it as the American dream, you know, the backyard business startup that, you know, with American ingenuity and the opportunity that we have in this country to basically be anything we want to be and share our ideas with, you know, with those around us. And so it's been a tremendous blessing. And I think back and I think, you know what, if that scrapyard would have taken that old junk bus when I took it in there the first time, runaway campers wouldn't be here today. And so often we don't see around the next corner in life. We don't always realize that some of the stumbling blocks or roadblocks that we come up upon in life are there that guide us or steer us in a different direction that we've yet to see yet. And so I'm grateful for some of the things that have happened that have kind of moved us in different directions over the years, some of the bumps and bruises that we've had. I share some of those stories in a short book that I wrote called Breaking Camp. So if you want to hear the whole story, be sure and grab a copy of that. I hope you enjoy it. But, you know, the most exciting thing about this journey has been the people. We're excited to be a part of hundreds and hundreds of people's lives over the past few years as we've grown and stretched with this business. We continue to research and do the best that we can to continue making a better and better product all the time for the money that you spend. And so, you know, the camper we built in the beginning was not the camper that we built when we built the first 10. And then after the 10, things changed. And after 20 and 40 and 50, things changed. And now after over 1,000 units, we just continue to make changes along the way to offer our customers the very best product for the money. And so we're excited about that. We're glad to be a part of so many people's lives and to realize that what a blessing it is. That when you invest in a runaway camper, you're not just investing in your own enjoyment. You're not just investing in something that you're going to use for pleasure on the weekends every now and then. You're investing in the American dream. You're investing in what this nation was founded on, the opportunities that we have to press forward through our ideas and through our circumstances and the dreams that we have. To make the most of the life that we have to live. And so you're investing in that. You're investing in the lives of the families that build these campers, that it supports their families. And you're investing in communities, in our own community, and in the charities that we support. You're investing in work that we do in foreign countries to help impoverished children and families. And so we're grateful for that and for the part that our customers play in that as well. As well as the support and the prayers that come in and the encouragement. Many times relationships we get cards, we get letters and emails and phone calls on a regular basis of people telling us how much the runaway has enhanced their life, that it's allowed them to meet new people and make new friends, and they even have a marriage on the books now because a couple met through their runaway campers. And so we're excited to be part of people's lives, and we're excited that we can share it with you as well. And so stop in and see us at our sales center in Central Florida, or maybe we'll run into each other in the out when we're out and about at a campground or a shopping center one day. But I hope you have a great day, and I hope the story encourages you to keep pressing through in everything in life and make it the very best that you possibly can. God bless you. Talk to you soon.
Hi, everyone. 2 years ago, my life changed forever. My wife, Kelsey, and I welcomed our daughter, Leela, into the world. Now, becoming a parent is an amazing, amazing experience. Your whole world changes overnight, and all of your priorities change immediately, so fast that it makes it really difficult to process sometimes. Now, you also have to learn a tremendous amount about being a parent. Like, for example, how to dress your child. This was new to me. This is an actual outfit. I thought this was a good idea. And even Leela knows that it's not a good idea. So there was so much to learn and so much craziness all at once. And to add to the craziness, Kelsey and I both work from home. We're entrepreneurs. We run our own businesses. So Kelsey is develops courses online for yoga teachers. I'm an author. And so I'm working for home. Kelsey's working for home. We have an infant, and we're trying to make sure that everything gets done that needs done. And life is really, really, really busy. And a couple weeks into this amazing experience, when the sleep deprivation really kicked in, like around week 8, I had this thought, and it was the same thought that parents across the ages, internationally, everybody has had this thought, which is, I am never going to have free time ever again. And somebody said it's true. Yeah, it's not exactly true, but it feels really, really true in that moment. And this was really disconcerting to me, because one of the things that I enjoy more than anything else is learning new things, getting curious about something and diving in and fiddling around and learning through trial and error and eventually becoming pretty good at something. And without this free time, I didn't know how I was ever going to do that ever again. And so I'm a big geek. I want to keep learning things. I want to keep growing. And so what I decided to do was go to the library and go to the bookstore and look at what research says about how we learn and how we learn quickly. And I read a bunch of books. I read a bunch of websites. And trying to answer this question, how long does it take to acquire a new skill? You know what I found? 10,000 hours. Anybody ever heard this? 10,000, it takes 10,000 hours. If you want to learn something new, if you want to be good at it, it's going to take 10,000 hours to get there. And I read this in book after book and website after website. And my mental experience of reading all of this stuff was like, no! I don't have time. I don't have 10,000 hours. I am never going to be able to learn anything new ever again. But that's not true. So 10,000 hours, just to give you a rough order of magnitude, 10,000 hours is a full-time job for 5 years. That's a long time. And we've all had the experience of learning something new, and it didn't take us anywhere close to that amount of time, right? So what's up? There's something kind of funky going on here. What the research says and what we expect and have experiences, they don't match up. And what I found, here's the wrinkle. The 10,000-hour rule came out of studies of expert-level performance. There was a professor at Florida State University. His name is K. Anders Ericsson. He's the originator of the 10,000-hour rule. And where that came from is he studied professional athletes, world-class musicians, chess grandmasters, all of these ultra-competitive folks in ultra-high-performing fields, and he tried to figure out how long does it take to get to the top of those kinds of fields. And what he found is the more deliberate practice, the more time that those individuals spent practicing the elements of whatever it is that they do, the more time you spend, the better you get. And the folks at the tippy top of their fields put in around 10,000 hours of practice. Now, we're talking about the game of telephone a little bit earlier. Here's what happened. An author by the name of Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book in 2007 called Outliers, The Story of Success. And the centerpiece of that book was the 10,000-hour rule. Practice a lot, practice well, and you will do extremely well. You reach the top of your field. So the message, what Dr. Ericsson was actually saying is, it takes 10,000 hours to get to the top of an ultra-competitive field in a very narrow subject. That's what that means. But here's what happened. Ever since Outliers came out, immediately came out, reached the top of the bestseller list, stayed there for 3 solid months, all of a sudden, the 10,000-hour rule was everywhere. and a society-wide game of telephone started to be played. So this message, it takes 10,000 hours to reach the top of an ultra-competitive field, became, it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert at something, which became, it takes 10,000 hours to become good at something, which became, it takes 10,000 hours to learn something. But that last statement, it takes 10,000 hours to learn something, it's not true. It's not true. So what the research actually says, if I spent a lot of time here at the CSU library in the cognitive psychology stacks because I'm a geek. And when you actually look at the studies of skill acquisition, you see over and over and over a graph like this. Now, researchers, whether they're studying a motor skill, something you do physically, or a mental skill, they like to study things that they can time, because you can quantify that, right? So they'll give research participants a little task, something that requires physical arrangement or something that requires learning a little mental trick, and they'll time how long a participant takes to complete the skill. And here's what this graph says. When you start, so when researchers gave participants a task, it took them a really long time because it was new and they were horrible. With a little bit of practice, they get better and better and better, and that early part of practice is really, really efficient. People get good at things with just a little bit of practice. Now, what's interesting to note is that if, you know, we don't really, for skills that we want to learn for ourselves, we don't care so much about time, right? We just care about how good we are, whatever good happens to mean. So if we relabel performance time to how good you are, the graph flips, and you get this famous and widely known, this is the learning curve. And the story of the learning curve is when you start, you're grossly incompetent and you know it, right? With a little bit of practice, you get really good really quick. So that early level of improvement is really fast. And then at a certain point, you reach a plateau, and the subsequent gains become much harder to get. They take more time to get. Now, my question is, I want that, right? How long does it take from starting something and being grossly incompetent and knowing it to being reasonably good in, hopefully, as short a period of time as possible? So, how long does that take? Here's what my research says. 20 hours. That's it. You can go from knowing nothing about any skill that you can think of. Want to learn a language? Want to learn how to draw? Want to learn how to juggle flaming chainsaws? If you put 20 hours of focused, deliberate practice into that thing, you will be astounded, astounded at how good you are. 20 hours is doable. That's about 45 minutes a day for about a month, even skipping a couple days here and there. 20 hours isn't that hard to accumulate. Now, there's a method to doing this, because it's not like you can just start fiddling around for about 20 hours and expect these massive improvements. There's a way to practice intelligently. There's a way to practice efficiently that will make sure that you invest those 20 hours in the most effective way that you possibly can. And here's the method. It applies to anything. The first is to deconstruct the skill. Decide exactly what you want to be able to do when you're done, and then look into the skill and break it down into smaller and smaller pieces. Most of the things that we think of as skills are actually big bundles of skills that require all sorts of different things. The more you can break apart the skill, the more you're able to decide what are the parts of the skill that will actually help me get to what I want, and then you can practice those first. And if you practice the most important things first, you'll be able to improve your performance in the least amount of time possible. The second is learn enough to self-correct. So get 3 to 5 resources about what it is you're trying to learn. Could be books, could be DVDs, could be courses, could be anything. But don't use those as a way to procrastinate on practice. I know I do this, right? Get like 20 books about the topic. It's like, I'm going to start learning how to program a computer when I complete these 20 books. No, that's procrastination. What you want to do is learn just enough that you can actually practice and self-correct or self-edit as you practice. So the learning becomes a way of getting better at noticing when you're making a mistake and then doing something a little different. The third is to remove barriers to practice. Distractions, television, internet, all of these things that get in the way of you actually sitting down and doing the work. And the more you're able to use just a little bit of willpower to remove the distractions that are keeping you from practicing, the more likely you are to actually sit down and practice, right? And the fourth is to practice for at least 20 hours. Now, most skills have what I call a frustration barrier. You know, the grossly incompetent knowing it part? That's really, really frustrating. We don't like to feel stupid. And feeling stupid is a barrier to us actually sitting down and doing the work. So by pre-committing to practicing whatever it is that you want to do for at least 20 hours, you will be able to overcome that initial frustration barrier and stick with the practice long enough to actually reap the rewards. All right, that's it. It's not rocket science. Four very simple steps that you can use to learn anything. Now, this is easy to talk about in theory, but it's more fun to talk about in practice. So one of the things that I've wanted to learn how to do for a long time is play the ukulele. Has anybody seen Jake Shimabukuro's TED Talk where he plays the ukulele and makes it sound like he's like an ukulele god? It's amazing. It's like I saw that. It's like, that is so cool. It's such a neat instrument. I would really like to learn how to play. And so I decided that to test this theory, I wanted to put 20 hours into practicing the ukulele and see where we got. And so the first thing about playing the ukulele is, in order to practice, you have to have one, right? So I got an ukulele, and my lovely assistant. Thank you, sir. I think I need the cord here. It's not just an ukulele, it's an electric ukulele. Yeah. So the first couple hours are just like the first couple hours of anything. You have to get the tools that you're using to practice. You have to make sure that they're available. My ukulele didn't come with strings attached. I had to figure out how to put those on. Like, that's kind of important, right? And learning how to tune and learning how to make sure that all of the things that need to be done in order to start practicing get done, right? Now, one of the things when I was ready to actually start practicing was I looked in online databases and songbooks for how to play songs. And they say, okay, ukuleles, you can play more than one string at a time, so you can play chords. That's cool. You're accompanying yourself. Yay, you. And when I started looking at songs, I had an ukulele chord book that had like hundreds of chords. Like looking at the same, like, whoa, that's intimidating. But when you look at the actual songs, you see the same chords over and over, right? As it turns out, playing the ukulele is kind of like doing anything. There's a very small set of things that are really important and techniques that you'll use all the time. And so in most songs, you'll use 4, maybe 5 chords, and that's it. That's the song. You don't have to know the hundreds as long as you know the 4 or the 5. So while I was doing my research, I found a wonderful little medley of pop songs by a band called Axis of Awesome. And somebody knows it. And what Axis of Awesome says is that you can learn, or you can play pretty much any pop song of the past 5 decades if you know 4 chords. And those chords are G, D, E minor, C. 4 chords. Pump out every pop song ever, right? So I thought, this is cool. I would like to play every pop song ever. So that was the first song I decided to learn, and I would like to actually share it with you. Ready? All right.
town girl, living in a lonely world. She took a midnight train going anywhere. I heard that you settled down, that you found a girl, that you're married now. Every night in my dreams I see you, I feel you. That's just how I know we'll go on. I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait, I'm yours. Cause you are amazing. We did amazing things. If I could, then I would. I'd go wherever you will. And can you feel the love tonight? Cause it is, with or without you. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me. Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. No woman, no cry, I'm mama, the surely is a dream. I come from London under. Once a jolly swag man camped by a billabong. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. But here's my number, so call me. Hey, sexy lady, whoop, 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 I'm Gangnam Style. Time to say goodbye. Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Thank you. Thank you. I love that song. And I have a secret to share with you. So by playing that song for you, I just hit my 20th hour of practicing the ukulele. Thank you. And so it's amazing. Pretty much anything that you can think of. What do you want to do? The major barrier to learning something new is not intellectual. It's not the process of you learning a bunch of little tips or tricks or things. The major barrier is emotional. We're scared. Feeling stupid doesn't feel good. In the beginning of learning anything new, you feel really stupid. So the major barrier is not intellectual, it's emotional. But put 20 hours into anything. It doesn't matter. What do you want to learn? Do you want to learn language? Do you want to learn how to cook? Do you want to learn how to draw? What turns you on? What lights you up? Go out and do that thing. It only takes 20 hours. Have fun.
Great job.
All right, the first 20 hours, and I want to weave that into our today's talk. We can talk about anything you guys want to talk about. This is a holiday weekend, with Veterans Day. And yesterday we had a de facto holiday due to the storm that passed through here. So I guess we have a de facto long weekend where I'm at in Florida. But anyway, today's podcast is titled Settlement Distinctions. The Freedom Georgia Strategy. Now, yesterday, we were blessed. I mean blessed by having the founders of the Freedom Georgia Initiative on yesterday. And they gave us some nuggets. And I went back and listened to, the archives, and I'll probably listen to it at least two, maybe three more times this coming weekend. But here's some of the things that I picked up, and that's why I have this settlement distinctions. Now, if we go in our program notes, which are right here on Blog Talk Radio, settlement distinctions. A settlement can be a town, city, village, an outpost, or metropolis. These settlements are usually located near natural resources or close together for security. New York City is a type, is one type of a settlement. Eatonville, Florida is a town. It's a type of settlement. All right. New York City metro area is a metropolis. It's huge, over 8 million people. They have different classifications. A town and city, they have two different definitions based on the particular location that it's in. Villages are typically smaller than towns, and they're smaller than cities, and they're definitely smaller than, you know, metropolises. Some, depending on where you're on the globe, the word outpost is used instead of the words town, city, or metropolis, or village. But if you want to start a town or you want to name a place a city, the best thing, the very first step, the common denominator with all of it, or any of it, is to get a hold of some land by legal means, purchase the land, and that land that you have, that's step one. And once again, it says in this definition here, these settlements are usually, settlement, now I'm just looking up online. A place typically that has been previously uninhabited where people establish a community. All right. And I need to include this in the definition we have online. All right. A settlement is a place that has been uninhabited where people establish a community. That's what Freedom, the Georgia Initiative, have done. They purchased, they're up to 502 acres now. They didn't start with 502. But every stick of land that they purchased was previously uninhabited. That's clue number one. Gotta tell this dude, call me on another number. Call me on, and I'll give him the studio number. (2945) Okay. So that's step one. Now you can stop right there because in the United States, and I'm just using black townships, historic black townships, there's probably anywhere from between 800 to 900 in the United States. Maybe even 1,000, but 800 to 900 is a safe number. Some, like Mound Bayou, Mississippi, Summit, Oklahoma, Eatonville, Florida, Highland Park, Maryland, Fairmont Heights, Maryland, Pembroke, Illinois, Hopkins Park, Illinois. These, well, I'm not sure about Hopkins Park. I think they are. Some have, or Brooklyn, Illinois, some have municipal charters. They have incorporated themselves. Those communities have incorporated themselves. All right. And they have municipal charters, so they're known as towns for the most part. Other places might call themselves villages. It, once again, it all depends on where you at, where you're at in the United States or on the globe. In Germany, a very small village is called a Dorf, D-O-R-F. And I've been in Dorfs that had maybe just four households. That's it. And larger cities and larger settlements known as cities, they might have subdivisions. Now, subdivision is typically a community within a larger community. All right. Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which was a part of the, within the Greenwood District, was a neighborhood. And maybe we could have called it a subdivision back then. All right, now, but it was within a larger settlement called Tulsa, Oklahoma, which had a municipal charter. And we're going to break that down one day as well. Okay. Because what did the other 50, I mean, there were 50 black townships, actually 50 plus. There were 50 black townships in Oklahoma at the time that had municipal charters. There were also equal to the black, what do you call it, the black townships, there were probably at least 50 other settlements in Oklahoma in 1921. Unincorporated. They just say, you know what, let's just buy the land, let's not incorporate, and we'll stay off the radar a little bit better. So there were probably at least 100 settlements, some incorporated with a municipal charter, some weren't. So what did the 100 do that Black Wall Street didn't do? And it all has to deal with geography. Those other 100 plus communities in Oklahoma, black Oklahoma at that time, they sought out, once again, uninhabited land, some incorporated and set up their own legal systems, law enforcement systems. Others say, you know what, we're fine just where we are geographically. We feel safe. We are safe. And it's been that way for over 100 years. So we're going to go into that more in detail at another time. But those are, let's see, what other nuggets did we get from yesterday? I got to find my studio again. Okay. Now, if anybody has any comments, if you heard yesterday's live stream where we spoke with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, feel free to give us some feedback on what you heard yesterday, but I got quite a bit out of it. Mindset is another thing. The founders of the Freedom Georgia Initiative, they have pioneer mindsets. They live in, as they stated in the interview yesterday, that they live in Metro Atlanta. And where they have their 502 acres is 2 hours away from Atlanta. And here's where the mindset comes in at. you have a lot of people that are so addicted to urban living. And urban living is, you know, the comfort and conveniences that that particular town might offer. In this case, we're talking about Atlanta, but it could be New York, Chicago, L.A., Seattle, Washington, San Francisco, Miami, Florida. It doesn't matter. But there's some people that live in Atlanta that haven't really gone outside of Atlanta, or they definitely haven't gone outside of metro Atlanta. But one of the things that they said was that instead of trying to fix the system in Atlanta by voting, and I'm adding this part in, by changing the attempting to change the system in Atlanta, they say, you know what, we're going to go and set up our own system. Now, in order to do that, they were willing to drive 2 hours away, and that's where they found their promised land. I did a podcast a month or two ago, or maybe 2 months ago, and I said, the promised land ain't in Egypt. I said, I worded the podcast just like that. The promised land ain't in Egypt. Atlanta, as well as Orlando, Los Angeles, San Antonio, Texas, Chicago, Boston, D.C., Baltimore, Indianapolis, Cleveland, all those towns are what I call Egypt. And all those places where high-profile homicides of black men and some women, or where there's a higher body count no matter what the race you are, those typical places are what I call Egypt. Egypt is on the grid. It's regulated. No matter how much you march and protest, you're not going to make much headway, if any at all, in Egypt. So what the Freedom Georgia Initiative done, and once again, this is with three ladies that were on yesterday. That's the Rain Trust that started that whole thing. They were willing to drive 2 hours outside of their regular comfort zone. They expanded their comfort zone and found their promised land. Now, the promised land in Freedom Call, you know, the bus line's not running there. Okay. But they're willing to do what it takes to set up their own infrastructure and go from there. So kudos to them on, you know, what they have started. Now, there are other groups out there, you know, they're the ones, maybe about four or five have come across my radar. I know of another group, the bulk of them are out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and they bought 110 acres in another part of Georgia. But we're working on getting them on here as well. But in my opinion, what they have demonstrated and are demonstrating beats, well, matter of fact, they're doing what I call do-it-yourself reparations. You didn't hear anything about, you know, going to the government for anything. Because what they did, you can't get it at the Social Services office. You're not going to get it from the million. There have been 2 million-man marches, and I'm not knocking the million-man march, but there's been two of them. They have done more with a four-hour drive round trip. And I'm going to tie this into the first 20 hours. See, when the two-hour drive, they're discussing, they're on a different wavelength, and that's part of the 20 hours because they immerse themselves in a type of thinking where they will be, you know, self-sufficient. I would say the biggest asset that I heard on that program yesterday's podcast, is all three have a positive mental attitude. I'm sure they've come across obstacles, as we all do, but with the positive mental attitude, they've got through it. I mean, it's just a major hurdle just to raise, but they raised enough money, 19 families, to get the first 97 acres. I know of other groups that have been talking about putting together something, and they've been talking on Doom calls or whatever for the last 2 years, but haven't bought one piece of dirt yet. But you know, they'll get around to, you know, these other groups will get around to doing it. But they have a great pioneering mindset, and they're doing what it takes. Now, let's see. What do we have here? Another thing I like about, I do like, observed is the Walmart strategy. Walmart, if you know the history of Walmart, which is well documented, Walmart was originally set up and built up a critical mass basis in the United States in small town USA. So although the Freedom Georgia Initiative, or Freedom Georgia for short, they're 2 hours away from Atlanta. Remember, Walmart and their other stores that they built up small towns across the globe, that's where you start out. It's easier politically, financially, any kind of way, if you start out in a small community. So they can get to a Walmart within, I think they told me yesterday, within a 15 to 20 minute drive. And that's the same thing like the property that I have in Oklahoma. Walmart is a 15 to 20 minute drive, as well as other places. So there's scores of places around the country in which you can, you know, you can be not so much remote, but removed from off the grid in a safe place where kids can play. You don't have to worry about no crazy people like that. And you can actually create and develop your world. But they have the tours. And once again, 2 hours from Atlanta, you can start with, instead of taking a whole bunch of cars, get into a van. The tours get larger, get into a bus. And they go out there and they do the tour. So that's 2 hours there. Let's say they spend another 2 hours at the location and another 2 hours back. So 2, 4, 6. 6 hours of immersion out of the 20 hours. Because some people seeing, or matter of fact, most people, seeing is believing. Next little thing that I picked up is no matter where you are, there's typically, if you like, particularly if you live in a high or expensive area, look at, I mean, with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, they, 2 hours away from Metro Atlanta, they found their promised land. That same principle applies to anything else. If you live in New York City, map out a 2 or 3 hour radius and see what communities that you can get into and you can buy land at an inexpensive price. Do it for New York. Do it for San Francisco. Do it for any price area. Like in Chicago, 45 minutes to an hour out. And I would say 45 minutes to an hour out from Chicago. there's opportunity because there's a lot of farmland. You know, it gets into other counties in Illinois, including Wisconsin and Indiana. But no matter where you are, be it Los Angeles, Houston, Texas, Boston, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., map out a 2 to 3 hour radius of where you are, whatever town you're in. They have calculators online for that now also. And then start looking at the communities in those areas and look for communities that have a small population. There are towns in this, matter of fact, I want to do a little social experiment this morning. 619-768-2945. I want you to call in and ask me, name a state. All right? I'm going to let you pick the state, maybe even two or three states. But pick the state, and then I'm going to tell you, then we're going to do in real time how to find the right communities to look for land in. So if anybody, you know, wants to call up, we just name a state or two or three, and then I'll tell you, using this principle that I'm talking about, based on the Freedom of Georgia, you know, like I say, they did a two, you know, their location, their promised land is 2 hours away. Just 2 hours away. And in the age that we work in now, you can telecommute that. You can set up shop and build, I mean, people that, because they people that are part of their community now, they have somewhere from 2 acres to a 6 acre lot. All right, that's like 2 to 6 football fields. And they can put, you know, build their own house on it. They can build, I mean, they offer carpentry classes, teaching people carpentry out there now. So the same thing that they're doing is the same thing that the historic Black Township people did over 100 years ago, except now they have an edge. The people today, we have internet connections and smartphones and tablets and all, you know, all these electronics, which will make it easier than it did over 100 years ago. All right, so a call in for that. Let's see. Another strategy is a two-county radius. A two-county radius. Now, let's go to Georgia. Let me see what county Atlanta is in. All right, Atlanta's got a population of 46,461 people, and we want to look at, because the next strategy is, it's in Fulton and DeKalb County. All right, Atlanta's spread out over two counties. So the next thing I'm going to ask you guys to look for is I want you to get a county map of Georgia. All right. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, let's see, Atlanta. All right, now I got a county map. I see Fulton County and DeKalb County. Okay. Now, another strategy would be on a radius side. Now, we just said a two-hour radius, that's in drive time, and another county, another strategy would be a two-county radius of Atlanta. So a two-county radius of Atlanta would be Now, you got to look at Fulton and DeKalb. So you look at, you go two, I mean, what are two counties away? Like, let's see, that would probably be Pickens County, maybe Cherokee. No, Cherokee's not far enough. Pickens County, Dawson County, Hall County, Barrow County, Walton County, Newton County, Spalding County, Meriwether County, look for Polk County, look for towns, look for counties that are within two counties away from Atlanta or any particular city that you're looking for. And then in those counties, and here's another clue. Look for counties that are rural counties. In the United States, you have urbanized counties, you have mixed counties, which are a mixture of urban and rural. You want to look for counties that are rural counties that are at least that within a two-county radius surrounding Atlanta. Now, you can go further than that. But I'm just saying that's another guideline that I go by. Okay. All right, now I got to go back to find my studio again. And let's see. And if you want to go through a particular state, I can go through that live on the air. Because, see, then I can tell you what towns to look for. You know, I just gave you a general, direction of where to look. That's where you can, those are places where you can get in light, so to speak. All right. And what else do we have here? And then they organize, you start with a car, then you the more people that are interested, you put them in a van. And then if it gets larger, then you have a bus that you can charter for the day. And, they have their tours. So they also have Zoom calls as well. So I would encourage everybody to, you can contact Freedom Georgia themselves. If you might want to be a part of their community, which is great. If you want ideas on how to start your own community, which they're doing it, so you can go to them as well. But like I say, listen to yesterday's podcast. We archive all our podcasts. And then, whatever piques your interest on what you can apply immediately, then, test it out. They gave a lot of gold nuggets yesterday. And, a year from now, you might not even have access to them. Okay. Right now, it was fortunate. It took me a little while to get them on here, but I'm glad I got them on. And we were very fortunate to get all three of them on at the same time. So they gave us about an hour and a half yesterday, hour 27 minutes, I believe. I would say that podcast probably, in my opinion, offered more social solutions and personal finance solutions than any podcast I think that I've done. But their goal is to eventually have their own municipality, which will have their own mayoral system, city council system, judicial system, That's their goal. So if you wanna get in on something, and like I say yesterday, I can't think, you know, in my opinion, just my opinion, they're doing what I call real civil rights. And civil rights is a broad thing, but I'll just leave it at that. They're doing real civil rights, real civil rights. They're setting up a community. Like I said, they're developing their own instead of trying to fix. Because, see, if the March on Washington, that whole thing, and I'm not knocking it, that was, because you got to see what works. Got to see what works. Okay. You know, if this doesn't work, well, let's try this strategy. So for some people, the March on Washington, that strategy could have worked. I don't know. All right. Martin Luther King lost his life. You know, he marched, he protested, he went to jail and all that, but lost his life behind that. So overall, I don't think that strategy really worked well, particularly for his family. Abraham Evers did a lot of good things. But overall, he lost his life. Overall, that strategy didn't work well. We've had 2 million man marches. None of them, to my knowledge, resulted in a township. There have been several high-profile murders. Excuse me, not murders. Homicides, that's a better legal word to use. In Minneapolis with George Floyd, Eric Garner in New York City, Ahmaud Arbery, wherever he was in either Georgia, I think. Or South Carolina, I think Georgia. Okay. All these, with the George Floyd thing, there were riots. With Rodney King in Los Angeles, there were riots. Although he wasn't killed, but it was beat. There were riots and protests. Eric Garner, I don't know what they did up that way. What's his name? Mike Brown in Missouri, I forgot the name of the town of Missouri, but there were protests. You know, over 60 or 90 days of protesting, of marching and protesting. And the marching and the protesting and the looting and the rioting were all various people's ways of trying to fix the problem. So what I love about Freedom Georgia, the Freedom Georgia Initiative, they say, you know what? We're not going to try to fix Atlanta. We're going to go out and build our own city, build our own community. And in my opinion, I can't think of another strategy that can beat that. That's why I'm not on board with the reparations thing. Unless it's what they're doing, what I call do-it-yourself reparations. They are healing by them buying land, by them deciding on how this is the infrastructure that we want. This is the kind of settlement that we want. This kind of legal entity that we want. That is self-healing. They are not going to anybody. They are the powers that be. They're not talking about what happened 400 years ago. They're talking about what's happening now. And I can't think of any strategy that can beat what they're doing. They're not the only ones doing it, but I'm just saying. I can't think of not one strategy that can beat what they're doing. And although they're pioneers in 2023, it's not the first time it's been done. Once again, there are at least 800 or 900 other settlements within the United States that are historically black settlements of various legal descriptions. Most of people do not know these places. But we've had several of them on here, that we've talked about. We've had some mayors on here. We've had at least three mayors on here of small black townships here in the United States. Taft, Oklahoma, Bossier, Alabama, Tallahassee, Oklahoma. We've had those three mayors on this podcast. And most people listening have not even heard of those places. You don't hear about crimes happening in those places. Go rural. I've said it once and I'll keep on saying it. Going rural is the best. It's the best strategy that you can go. If you want to stay safe, if you want a reasonable cost of living, go rural. Okay, let's see. Now that's enough of my ranting. If anybody has any comments, just 619-768-2945. I'm trying to find my way back. Oh, here it is. The studio here. Okay, I found it. All right. So we'll be giving updates because we've got some land. So the first 4 acres of ours, that's called, which I pronounced it on here before, it's this 4 acres. It's Earth Wealth E-Village, which in E stands for energy, Earth Wealth Energy Village. And we're just going to keep it as a plan because it's just 4 acres. But we'll reveal the plans on that on a weekly basis as we go. I've gotten some ideas. Basically, I'm taking some ideas that I heard yesterday and incorporated in what we're doing. And I'll be looking for other people like that. Like I said, I know of another group. They purchased 110 acres in Georgia. Now, you don't have to go to Georgia because I'm not going to say out of the 50 states, there's about 32 states where you can purchase land at very affordable prices out of the 50 states. Okay. The places where I would recommend to stay away from would be stay away from places along the I-95 corridor, like from Richmond on up to Boston. That's a very densely populated area, metro, various metro areas up in there. Stay away from there, and then the rest of the country is virtually wide open. Wide open. Now, you stay away from the major metro areas like the Inland Empire in California. Stay away from Los Angeles metro area. Stay away from San Francisco. Stay away from the big metro areas. And then in future weeks, what we'll do is we'll give you the numbers. You want to go to the places that have small amount, the lower the population, the less rules and regulations. The less rules and regulations, the more freedom. Now, freedom does cost. Freedom ain't free. Freedom does cost. You're going to have to pick up some new, more than likely, you're going to have to pick up some new life skills. Me, I'm learning new life skills. I'm learning carpentry. I'm learning house building. I have to. All right. I had to learn how to, drill for a well. I got one, but I didn't dig it. I didn't drill for it. I had to learn that. Water harvesting. I had to learn that. So they're going to be skills that you're going to need to pick up. And these skills, nobody's hiding it away from anybody. It's just typically in the mainstream educational system, they're not teaching these skills. But you can pick these skills up. Okay. We're going to take a short break here with a tad bit of information. If you got any commentary on yesterday, or anything at all, 619-768-2945. Press 1 and we'll get you in.
This is the city, Los Angeles, California. 464.8 square miles of real estate. It takes a lot of departments and agencies to keep it going. Fire, water and power, education, health. There's a Department of Airports, a Harbor Department, and libraries. There's also a Department for Law and Order. This is Parker Center. I work here. I carry a badge. It was Monday, June 29th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. The boss is Captain Brown. My partner's Bill Gannon. My name's Friday. Mrs. Lily Burnham, a real estate broker, has been reported missing. The preliminary investigation indicated a strong possibility of foul play.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
I drove over to the offices of the Burnham Realty Company, 9.05 a.m.
Good morning. May I help you?
Police officers, this is Bill Gannon. My name's Friday.
I'll tell Mr. Richmond you're here.
Thank you.
I'll just be a moment.
Oh, take a look at this, Joe. Beautiful home, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can tell quality construction. 3+10, 2 baths, built-ins. What do you figure the asking is?
The what?
The asking price. How much for this one?
Well, I wouldn't have any idea.
Got to be 42.5. Probably take 39.7 today's market.
Is that right?
You bet. I know the market pretty good.
You do, huh?
Every Sunday we go for a drive. Eileen will watch for open houses, you know, furnished models.
Yeah.
We stop and go through them, spend the whole afternoon. We've seen some great buys, Joe.
Well, I didn't know you were interested in a new house.
What makes you say that?
Well, I mean, you're out looking at all those great buys.
Well, you've been out to my place.
That's right.
What's wrong with the house I've got?
Sergeant Friday, this is Mr. Richmond, one of our salesmen.
Sergeant.
My partner, Officer Bill Gannon.
Well, you gentlemen aren't here to buy a house, so I better let you do the talking.
Wonder if we could have your name, miss.
That's right, Miss Walters. Ida Walters.
And you filed a missing report, did you?
Well, yes, sir. I'm Mrs. Burnham's secretary.
Ida phoned them in, Sergeant, on my say-so.
How long has she been missing?
From our happy little circle since Friday afternoon. Went out to show some property about 2 o'clock.
2:15. I saw her drive away.
Did you? Well, then, Ida must have been the last one to see her.
She didn't even phone in again.
Was that unusual?
Yes, sir.
The weekend, gentlemen. That's when we move houses. A man and wife, generally, they can't get out together during the week, so we spend Saturdays and Sundays sitting in a furnished model, wheeling and dealing. You know.
Yes, sir.
Now, you take Miss Lily. She's a businesswoman. Nothing would keep her from a weekend of wheeling and dealing.
Something did.
Yeah, that's why we reported it.
Maybe she's sick.
I called her apartment house. Somebody looked in.
Yes, ma'am.
But they don't think she's been there all weekend.
She might have gone out of town. Has that ever happened before?
Not on a weekend.
Does she have relatives?
There's a sister, I think, in Philadelphia. Nobody out here.
Well, there must have been a husband at one time. What about him?
He's never mentioned.
All right. Does she have a boyfriend?
There's Terry Williams, but it looks like he doesn't know anything either.
Mr. Williams has been calling us 2 or 3 times on Friday and again this morning.
I see. Well, maybe there's somebody else.
Wouldn't matter, Sergeant.
Well, how's that?
She had an appointment this morning to close the deal. No man would ever stand between Lily and the commission, or a woman either.
Maybe that's the secret of her success.
You have to understand, gentlemen, Ida is the president of the Miss Lily Fan Club. I work here just for money. It gives us different perspectives.
Do you need me for anything else?
We'll need a description of Mrs. Burnham.
Well, she's attractive, I guess, if you lack them cold and ruthless. Age, what would you say, Ida?
About 36.
Yeah, 36 going on 42. But she's kept her figure and knows how to dress.
You remember what she was wearing Friday?
Your department, Ida.
It was her paisley linen dress. Over it, she wore a matching linen coat.
What color?
The dress was orange and yellow, and the coat was yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And bone leather shoes with a matching purse. It's very smart.
Yes, ma'am. Anything else?
No, except we're all terribly worried. It's just not like Mrs. Burnham. She must have had an accident or something.
Something has kept her away, but knowing our Lily...
Yeah.
I doubt it was an accident.
Before leaving the realty office, we learned that Terry Williams, the missing woman's boyfriend, was the day bartender at a bar on West Adams. We also obtained the make, model, and license number of Mrs. Burnham's car. 10:50 a.m., we went back to the office, and after checking R&I, we put out a teletype describing the vehicle with a request that, if observed, to notify Homicide Division. 11:05 a.m., we drove over to West Adams to interview Terry Williams, Mrs. Burnham's boyfriend.
Good morning.
Terry Williams.
That's right.
Police officers.
Mm-hmm. It's about Lily Burnham, isn't it?
That's right.
Only thing it could be. The secretary said they were going to report it if she didn't show up soon. Guess she hasn't, huh?
When did you see her last?
Thursday night. We had dinner, a couple of drinks. Broke it up early.
See her over the weekend?
No, sir.
You didn't make a date with her?
Nothing definite. Said I'd call. Maybe we'd get together.
Did you call?
A few times. Got no answer.
How long have you known Mrs. Burnham?
Guess it must be close to a year now.
She got any other boyfriends that you know of?
Don't see how she could. We were together most of the time.
But not over the weekend?
That's right. Because she wasn't in when I called. I explained all that.
Would you happen to have a photograph of her?
No, sir.
Use the phone.
Do you know if Mrs. Burnham carried a lot of cash?
She was never short, but not enough to go very far. That's what you're thinking.
That's not what I'm thinking.
Robbery? How much do you need to get mugged these days?
Not very much.
Excuse me. Got a customer down here.
Nothing on Williams. Local boy. Clean all the way through high school.
Yeah.
Mrs. Burnham's car turned up. They want it moved before tonight. They need the space.
Who's that?
Car's in a restaurant parking lot.
A.M. According to the parking lot attendant, the car had been discovered on the lot Saturday morning. It was first assumed the owner, deciding he was incapable of driving, had gone home in a cab and would return for it the next day. When it was still there 48 hours later, it was reported abandoned.
Book of real estate listings.
Keys are in the ignition.
Gas receipt, Mrs. Lily Burnham, 17 gallons.
Tank's almost full. Where'd she buy the gas?
Station out near Hanson Dam.
12 noon. Before leaving the lot, we arranged to have Mrs. Burnham's car gone over by SID. An examination of the loose leaf book revealed 8 listings in the Hanson Dam area. 12:20 p.m., we interviewed the attendant at Jackson and Martin's Super Service. After hearing a description of Mrs. Burnham in her car, he thought he remembered her from last Friday. He was almost certain there had been a man in the car with her, but he was unable to give us any description of him. We got a copy of the recent listings from the Burnham Realty Company. We also picked up a set of keys for the houses. 12:35 p.m., we started checking the various listings. The occupants of the houses told us Mrs. Burnham had not been there at any time in the past month. 12:48 p.m., the third house we checked was vacant and still for sale.
What was it, number 1223?
That's right.
Yeah, here we are. Lipstick on them. Could have been here a long time.
Yeah, I'll check the rest of the place. Bill.
Orange and yellow linen dress, bone shoes, matching handbag.
Yep. Mrs. Lily Burnham. p.m. In answer to our request, a field supervisor and 2 radio units arrived at the scene. 1 unit was stationed at the end of the street to keep out curious onlookers. The other was sent to cruise the area in the hopes of locating witnesses. Men from SID were also dispatched. The room was dusted for fingerprints. Photographs, both in black and white and color, were taken of the victim.
You want to take a look at this now? Outside was wiped clean. $50 in bills.
Inside's pretty neat, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't look like anybody prowled it. Usual stuff in it. Compact lipstick, nail file, comb.
Yeah. Better take these beads along. They're broken.
I was just thinking.
Yeah?
This purse, the stuff in it. Not like my wife's.
What do you mean?
You know what's missing? Credit cards.
Well, we know she had a gas card.
Not anymore, she doesn't.
p.m. The radio unit, which had been cruising the area, had located a possible witness. Frank Stobie, a local handyman, told us that while riding past the house on his bicycle at roughly 2:30 p.m. the previous Friday, he had seen a man and a woman approaching the front entrance. He described the victim's clothing with reasonable accuracy, but he could not recall any details about the man. 5:20 p.m. Bill and I decided to re-interview the victim's boyfriend, Terry Williams. At the Red Quill Bar, we were told that he had already left for the day. We got his home address.
Okay, what is it? What do you want this time?
We want to talk to you again.
Did you find Lily?
We'd like you to come downtown with us, Williams.
So she's dead.
What makes you say that?
It's true, isn't it?
You got a coat?
Are you guys arresting me?
No, we just want to get some more information.
Okay. Let me wash my face.
All right.
Joe? Take a look.
If I can just get a clean shirt on.
You look fine.
Then you're not taking me in.
Now listen carefully. You have the right to remain silent. Any statements you make can and will be used against you in a court of law. Do you understand that?
Then you are arresting me.
You have the right to the presence of an attorney. If you cannot afford one, one will be appointed without charge before any questioning.
Do you understand that?
Yeah, I understand. I just want to know why.
Well, that makes us even.
Hmm?
We just want to know why you've got those four beads.
Oh, I can explain those.
Suppose you do that.
Thursday night. I told you about it. It was my birthday. Lily took me to dinner. Afterwards, we came over here for a little while.
Go on.
She broke her beads. Or maybe I did. One way or the other, the string got busted. I fixed it for her and thought all the beads were on it. But when I sacked out for the night, those four turned up.
Where did they turn up?
On the couch. Except one I found in the cuff of my slacks. Now, that's the truth.
Maybe. But you didn't tell us all that this morning.
I didn't think it was important then.
Why do you think it is now?
p.m. Terry Williams was booked for murder. Under interrogation, he made several conflicting statements. He admitted that last Thursday was not his birthday and that Lily Burnham had been in the habit of picking up all their tabs. He also admitted they had quarreled that night, but he continued to deny having seen her after she left his apartment around midnight. He could not satisfactorily account for his whereabouts at the approximate time of the murder. 8:05 p.m., the suspect agreed to undergo a polygraph examination. It was conducted by Lieutenant W.L. Klingon. 11:30 p.m., we were given the results of the examination.
First, let me say there were strong patterns indicating deception. For instance, a good reading on the money in the victim's billfold.
He knew how much?
On the nose. It's possible she always carried exactly $50. Some people limit themselves to a certain amount.
Yeah.
Also, a good response on the clothes she was wearing, the string of beads getting broken in a quarrel, and the general location of the crime.
What location?
Handsome Dam area. I'll return to that in a minute. I got a positive reading on the victim's death by strangulation. Now, let me ask you a question, Joe, Bill. Where was she killed?
What do you mean, Lieutenant?
Could she have been murdered somewhere else and her body moved into the house?
No, we didn't find any evidence to suggest that. None at all.
Specifically in the victim's car, parked somewhere in an alley.
You got that reaction from Williams?
Very strongly, and it was dark, rather late at night.
We've got a good witness placing the victim at the house about 2:30 Friday afternoon.
We think she was strangled shortly after. Coroner might confirm the time, Joe.
Yeah, we'll know after the post tomorrow.
All right, let's get back to this reaction on Hanson Dam. Could he have known she was going out there?
Well, the victim might have mentioned it the night before.
Well, I have to tell you, I got no indication at all that he knows the location of the house, or that he took her car, or that he knew where the car was found abandoned.
He just doesn't know the right things, does he?
And yet he reacted to her being dead by strangulation.
That's true, but a woman being strangled in a car parked in an alley is a fairly common scene in mystery novels or on TV. Or he could have been reacting to the way he would have done it.
You mean he might have just played back to you something he'd read?
Or saw in the movie, say, in the last 24 hours. And didn't they quarrel Thursday night in his apartment?
Yeah, according to him.
Well, she got loud and disturbed the other tenants. Well, Williams may have wished he could quiet her down.
I see. Well, what's your best opinion, Lee?
Looks to me like you've got some work to do.
Yeah, how's that?
I don't think he's a good suspect.
Tuesday, June 30th, we attended the postmortem on Lily Burnham. The coroner confirmed that death was due to manual strangulation. He fixed the time of death somewhere between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. the previous Friday. There was no evidence of sexual assault. On the basis of this information, Terry Williams was cleared and released. 11:30 a.m., Bill and I went back to the office. Bill contacted the real estate secretary, Ida Walters, and asked if she would check Lily Burnham's charge accounts. Miss Walters agreed and said she'd let us know. Friday, July 3rd, in response to a message from Ida Walters, we drove over to the Burnham Realty Company, 2:20 p.m.
I'm sorry I took so long.
That's all right, Miss Walters.
I knew Mrs. Burnham had many charge accounts, but nobody can find any cards or charger plates or anything, unless you found them with her.
No, ma'am, we don't have them.
Well, the only thing I could do was go through the files and look for old receipts and then verify that these accounts were still active.
Yeah.
It was the least I could do for... Anyway, it took time.
What did you find?
Two service station cards, Diners Club, carte blanche, an air travel card, just about all the major department stores, and Bank America card. I made this list.
Thank you.
Sergeant, is it true what the papers say that Mrs. Burnham was... It happened last Friday afternoon?
Yes, ma'am. It's been verified.
Then I'm right.
How do you mean?
This statement just came in today from Barton's Wilshire.
Yes, ma'am.
It shows that Mrs. Burnham bought a diamond wristwatch for over $400. At first, I thought the store had made a mistake.
But you called the store, did you?
Yes, sir. They said there was no mistake. They were very positive. I knew then that there was something wrong. I mean, it just isn't possible. Mrs. Burnham couldn't put a charge in her account the day after she was... Excuse me.
All right, whoever it was stole her credit cards. Figured that way he'd buy a lot of stuff that he could sell off later. He'd need a woman to use those cards.
That's right.
Made an appointment with Mrs. Burnham to look at a house. Got her alone.
Yeah.
Then he killed her.
p.m. A description of the suspect's M.O. was circulated to all police departments. A different version of this bulletin was sent to a real estate trade journal for publication. Tuesday, July 7th. A response to our bulletin came in from Phoenix, Arizona.
Man identified as Carl Keegan, alias William Simpson, victimized 9 women in Phoenix. Same M.O., stole credit cards.
Yeah, what about the description?
Good one. This Keegan's wanted on a fugitive warrant.
Yeah.
He jumped bail down there.
1 week passed. Tuesday, July 14th. We got a call from Sergeant Jack Williams, Robbery Division. He said he thought he might have something for us. Bill and I went down to the robbery squad room to see him.
Friday, Gannon.
Jack, how's it going?
Can't complain. Got a bank series going that's keeping us on the run.
Is that right?
A couple of on-ramp specialists. They're really hitting pretty good.
He said you might have something for us.
Yeah, on that realty thing you guys are working.
What do you got?
Just got back in from talking to this woman. Lady realtor down near Inglewood. Name's Roy, Ardith Roy.
Yeah, what about her?
Since about 4 days ago, she was out showing a house to a prospective buyer. Said the guy appeared interested in the house and told her he'd check back with her about making a deal in a few days.
Yeah.
Roy woman said she wrote it off as a no sale. The guy left her at the empty house, she locked up and started back for her office. On the way back, she stopped for a tank of gas. When she went to give the attendant her credit card, she noticed it was gone. Not only her gas card, but all of her cards.
Now, the man she was showing the house to, did he give a name?
Yeah, Simpson. William Simpson.
She gave you a description?
Yeah. It's all down here. There's more.
Go ahead.
Well, she figured until today, maybe she just lost the cards or misplaced them. She finished checking her morning mail. That's why she called in.
Yeah.
She got a bill from Mallard, you know, the sporting goods store?
Yeah.
Well, the bill was for $780. Most she ever bought there was a catcher's mitt for her son's birthday.
Did you check the store?
Yeah. Clerk remembers a rather nice-looking girl who charged the stuff. He asked for identification. The girl showed him all the other credit cards, so naturally he didn't question the purchase. Big store. Doubtful if anybody would know the Roy woman on site.
That it?
Well, that's it. Whoever you're looking for, sorry I can't serve him up on a plate, but it ties, doesn't it?
Sure sounds like it, Jack. Now, this realtor, she say anything about the man's behavior?
She said he appeared courteous, looked the house over carefully, appeared straight enough to her.
How'd this Simpson get to her purse, she say?
Told her she left it on the kitchen sink. The two of them wandered through the house. When they got to one of the back bedrooms, the guy said he'd like to take one more look at the kitchen. She stayed in the bedroom, and he went to the kitchen by himself.
Thanks, Jack.
Got anything going for you?
We put a notice in the Real Estate Trade Journal. About all we can do is wait and hope it brings rain.
And in the meantime, there are a lot of empty houses to show.
And a lot of credit cards to steal. Wednesday, July 22nd, 10:45 a.m. We got our first break. Woman realtor out of McCoyman just phoned in. Name's Esther Jenkins. Saw her notice in the trade journal. Says she's got a date to show a house in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Description fits Keegan. 11:15 a.m. We arrived at the address given us by the realtor who had telephoned in. Mrs. Esther Jenkins.
I think you'll really enjoy this home. It seems to have everything you're looking for.
Yes, I believe this is just what I want.
Hello. Would you gentlemen like to see the house?
Police officers.
Stand still.
You're Esther Jenkins?
That's right.
Just a moment. I don't think you have a right to do this.
We have a right to look at your identification.
And I'm entitled to know why.
You've been the route. There's a fugitive want on you. You jumped bail in Arizona. Let's have your name.
William Simpson.
Miss Jenkins, are you carrying any credit cards?
Yes, I am.
Would you mind showing them to us?
No, not at all. I always carry them with me. That's strange. I had them just a few minutes ago.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm positive. I always carry them with me.
I hope you're not accusing me of taking them.
Well, now, maybe your name's Esther Jenkins. That's what it says on these credit cards.
You can't do a thing until I talk to my attorney.
Miss Jenkins?
Yes. Those are mine, all right.
All right, put your hands behind your back.
Just a minute. Who do you think you're pushing around?
We're not pushing you around, but since you don't seem to know, I'll tell you what your name is. It's Carl Keegan. You killed a realtor by the name of Lily Burnham, just like you would have this woman if she'd found out you stole these cards.
You can't prove any of that.
Well, we're going to try.
You made a mistake, and I'm not going to pay for it.
You're going to use a credit card?
Just seen is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On September 20th, trial was held in Department 185, Superior Court of the State of California for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. The suspect was found guilty of murder in the first degree. Murder in the first degree is punishable by death or confinement in the state prison for life, at the discretion of the court or jury trying the same. Subsequent investigation led to the identification and arrest of Carl Keegan's female accomplice, who was tried and found guilty on 5 counts of forgery. Forgery is punishable by imprisonment in the state prison for not less than 1 year, nor more than 14 years, or by imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 1 year. We'll be right back.
right. That was a little bit of the television show Dragnet, which took place in Los Angeles, California. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up for today. We're going to continue from time to time to talk about the success strategies that have been used by Freedom Georgia. If you missed yesterday's podcast, go into our archives and look up, you know, Freedom Georgia, which is yesterday. And it's about an hour and a half, hour 27 minutes to be exact. Look that up, listen to it, take notes. Like I say, some of the things that they mentioned, we shall be incorporating in what we do. Okay, we've already got land. We don't have nearly as much as they do, but that's okay. And that's okay for you. You know, you might not have that first acre yet. That's okay. But we're going to be teaching people, and, you know, they put out quite a number. So, you know what, we're going to try some of the ideas and work it out here. Now, let's see. Any weekend announcements, and I just discovered I got a problem here at my house. Now, well, yesterday we just had a, what do you call it? A tropical storm that went through. We survived that, and we've had two this year. I'm in Florida. But now I just discovered I have another problem. I got a raccoon in my roots. In my attic, excuse me, in the attic. Just saw it a few minutes ago. That's a new challenge for me because I've never had to deal with a raccoon. So if any of you guys have had any dealings with raccoons, how to get rid of them, please let me know. see. Anyway, you know what? That's another reason why I'm a big fan of tiny houses. You don't have the anyway. It's just less headache when you have a larger house. I mean, less headache when you have a tiny house. Okay, I'm looking for our outro music. Anybody's got any closing statements, comments, announcements? 619-768-2945. That's the number to call, and, oh, man. Okay. Well, you guys have a great weekend. I got to figure out how to get rid of a raccoon.